urban gardens. Again, that's How Cuba Survived Peak Oil, Thursday, August 8th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is KBOO Portland. Coming up next at 8 o'clock, the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show talks to Rose City Antifa, and they join Abe and Joe to discuss dissent in the age of Trump. KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from Grendel's Coffee House, located at East Burnside Street and 8th Avenue in Portland, offering organic coffee, daily soup specials, sandwiches, and more for breakfast and lunch. Open daily until 5 p.m. More information on the Grendel's Facebook page and by phone at 503-595-9550.
Okay, that's fine. I'm going to introduce them. Seven on the FM dial. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. This is Joe Uris, and I'm glad to have an opportunity to talk with Antifa people. And I want to tell you that you can call us at 231-8187. Hey, hello.
Hello.
Hi.
I am really glad you guys are willing to talk with us. I'm a very, very, I got to admit this, I'm very, very out of it. And I want to know exactly, as much as you can tell me, about Antifa. And I want to be very fair about this because there's been a lot of misunderstanding on this issue. Can you outline your purposes and technique?
Yeah, so Rose City Antifa started in 2007 in response to a festival that was being put on by Hammerskins, who are a pretty hardcore neo-Nazi group, and a coalition of people came together to shut down their event, and they were successful, and after that they decided to keep going and form into a more formal group, and that was the beginning of Rose City Antifa.
I'm able to add on that anti-fascism as a tactic under that name started as early as the 20th century early 20th century. We categorize anti-fascism as militant direct confrontation with fascists, and that can mean many different things. And we agree there are so many misunderstandings and myths being perpetuated in the media right now. And we're really happy that you have had us on the show to speak with you today. We wanted to check to see if you could hear us okay.
Yeah, we can hear you just
fine. We can hear you, and we're really glad you're here, by the way.
Yeah, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having us. Yeah, thank you.
One of our intentions in having you on today was to do exactly what you just said, to put you live in front of an audience to confront some of the myths surrounding Antifa and your tactics. My question for you is, Joe and I think are of a similar opinion on this, in that we should all be anti-fascist, right? We should all resist fascism. We should all be able to recognize its signs. We should be able to nip it in the bud if we have a perceptive and activist society. So my question for you is, do you believe it's necessary to confront fascism in a militant way, as you just described?
Yeah, we definitely do. We think there's a long history that shows that these tactics are effective, and we are not interested in using courts or police or the state to confront fascism. We think it has to be done by the community and by the people in the community who would be affected by fascism.
Do you believe that working through established institutions is simply ineffective, or those institutions are not interested in confronting fascism themselves?
I think that it's both of those things. The creation of the U.S. project is rooted in white supremacist settler colonialism. You see that upheld in many different facets of how our society is organized. And so I think that from on the ground to the, you know, dangerous gang that is the Portland PD, being incredibly violent toward those that are defending their community, to and also on a larger scale, for example, the resolution that Ted Cruz is trying to get signed onto at this time. I think there are many examples of the current state letting people down in terms of creating safety for our communities. We do not see them creating safety. In fact, we view it as the opposite, that they protect those that wish to harm us in very violent ways.
I really appreciate what you're doing. I want to throw a little historical note into this, and I'm sure you have thought of this, and it won't be news to you, but a lot of people are not thinking about it. The struggle against fascism in Germany in the 20s and 30s was characterized by a strong communist and a strong social democratic movement, which were fighting against the fascist movements of the Nazis. The ruling class, in their terror of a possible revolution in a chaotic economic and political situation, turned to supporting the Nazis, thinking they could control them, which was stupid. And in that process, a lot of destructive behaviors, as we all know, including World War II and the slaughter of 6 million people and so on, took place. Now, my question is it the case, or do you worry about the fear of the right and of the many, many, many Americans who, without knowing it, really are conservative fundamentally? Is that a danger to freedom in the country? And as a reaction to anti-fascist movements, which are very visible and very, very, very strong, a thing which could further the fascist element in the United States. How do you think about that, and how do you deal with that?
Well, I guess I feel like, you're right, and there is a similar dynamic developing today. Although, I mean, it's not a complete parallel, but
oh, of course,
And a lot of people have lost a lot, and one of the things people are clinging to is whiteness as kind of the only thing they have left. And I'm not really sympathetic at all to that, but I do believe that is what is taking place. So we're seeing a huge rise in really reactionary tendencies.
So you see the Trump administration that is representative of a sort of creeping authoritarianism in American culture?
Definitely.
Absolutely.
I'd say rather than creeping, I'd say leaping.
Leaping authoritarianism. Yeah, exactly. All right, so I want to ask you a little bit about your organization and your tactics. It's my understanding, and please correct me if I'm wrong, that Antifa is not a highly organized or centralized movement. Rather, it is a movement that is similar in ethos and values that has sprung up in metropolitan centers around the nation. Is that accurate?
Yes, we would agree with that interpretation. Okay. Anti-fascism looks many different ways for many different people, and of course we can't speak to and we do not represent all those that identify with the anti-fascism tactic. We believe that there are many different ways that anti-fascism looks. So, for example, community education projects, you see that in a lot of organizations all over the country, right? Folks that hold gatherings to study and try to understand our current conditions so that we can struggle against them and struggle against fascism. You see anti-fascists doing research to root out dangerous Nazis in our community and warn communities of their presence, and empower communities to make their own choices and engage in that work themselves. And so we believe it looks many different ways. We are very heartened and excited that there are many people joining in the fight against fascism at this time. We believe we will win, and we are incredibly excited to see that so many different people are engaging in so many different ways within the community in the fight.
Well, I appreciate that. I'm trying to be careful here to not speak too broadly about a movement which is anything but monolithic, the more I learn about it. So I appreciate you shedding a little light on that. So I want to ask you a little bit about direct confrontation with reactionary forces, with outright forces. Last August, down on the waterfront here in Portland, as you, I'm sure you recall, was a pretty memorable affair when Joey Gibson and his cronies showed up. So I went amongst the alt-right on that day, introducing myself as a journalist from KBOO and asking them why they were there. And more than one person answered me that they were not there necessarily to promote their ideology, but rather they were there to fight Antifa. Right. So what I'm trying to get at here is this: what separates Antifa from a lot of leftist movements is your, and again here I'm treading really lightly, your willingness to embrace violence if necessary. So my question for you is, do you believe that violent confrontation with the forces of the reactionary right is a necessary step in purging our society of their influence?
Well, honestly, I think they would be attacking someone no matter what, and Antifa is a convenient target for them. And a lot of them see it as a fight with just the far left. So whatever group represents the far left, or just the left, is who they want to attack, because they see that our interests are at odds with each other. Personally, I don't think anyone in Rose City Antifa loves violence. I'm sure no one does. Mm-hmm. It's not something we like. It's just something that is going to come up, is kind of inevitable. We live in an incredibly violent society, and when we push back against the violence of fascists or the violence of the state, then it stands out as us being violent, but there's tons of violence going on all the time that goes unnoted. So in a sense it's necessary, but it's not really our main goal at all.
Yeah, I can appreciate that, and I understand that as a reaction on the part of the left to what has been occasionally, and certainly in Portland a lot, the sudden appearance of truly fascist opportunists, I would call them, who are seeking attention and who seem to capture a lot of attention from the right, including the so-called legitimate right, you know, the Lars Larsons on the radio of this world. So here's my problem, and it's my problem. It's not your problem. I was raised in the tradition of passivism and of nonviolent action and of a very disciplined approach to right-wing reactionary groups and movements. And the Antifa movement seems to me to be almost antithetical to that kind of pacifist but nonviolent approach where, for example, you might sit down against fascist movements. And I'm thinking, well, that wouldn't work necessarily with these people because they can be and often are thugs. But I'm concerned because, again, I mentioned the history of Europe, and I'm frightened that when one begins to scare the hell out of the conservative, ordinary American ruling class, ordinary being kind of a weird word here, one gives them the legitimacy to crack down on all of the left. And I just wanted, this is a kind of theoretical thing, but it's a serious thing. How do you see that, and how do you see yourselves in that situation?
Well, I think that as the contradictions of capitalism heighten, right, as we see an emergence of fascism, as we see an emergence of state repression, mm-hmm. there are going to be many different approaches across the board to that. And I believe that we, like I said, I don't mean to contradict you, but just to, again, point out that there are so many different approaches that there are approaches that are in your tradition of, nonviolence. There is research. There is, like I said, community education projects. There are so many different ways for people to engage with that. And we see a variety of opportunities for people to do that, and we are currently seeing that now.
Yeah, I just would add that the Black Bloc and all the stuff you see in the news is a really small part of the organizing that we do. So, what appears to be primarily a violent movement is really anything but. And during the time, during the civil rights era, liberals and the mainstream media complained that Martin Luther King's tactics were too militant, and they agreed with his goals, but this guy is taking things too far, etc. So really, I think no matter what the left does, it's going to be too much for the ruling class.
That's very helpful. Just on the notion of contradicting us, I want you to feel, in the context of this conversation, really any time, to go ahead and contradict us. What we're trying to get at is a deeper understanding of your movement and how it fits into the larger struggle against reactionary forces in our culture. So please, if we get something wrong, if you feel the need to contradict, go ahead and do it. Especially Joe, you can contradict him all day long.
Fun. We're saying fun. We're going to have fun.
So I want to ask you a little bit about the position and the posturing of official institutional power with respect to your organization and the way you interact with the alt-right. Specifically, I'm talking about the Portland Police Bureau. I mentioned last August's confrontation down on the waterfront. Now, when I was there observing on both sides of this conflict, I saw the Portland police arrayed in a full picket line, essentially separating one group from the other.
But talk about armoring up.
Their posture, their focus, their attention were overwhelmingly focused on your side of the street, away from the white supremacists. So here I was. I'm sure I was not alone in feeling this way. A taxpaying member, a taxpaying resident of Portland, watching my police bureau protecting white nationalists, rather than in what are, in my mind, right-thinking Americans who are showing up to say to white supremacists, "You're welcome here. Your message is not welcome here." So how do you navigate that situation in which you're doing what I clearly perceive, and I think a lot of people clearly perceive, you are adopting what is the morally correct stance. You are opposing fascism. So what do you do in that situation when you are also opposing the armed might of the state in the form of the Portland Police Bureau?
Yeah. Well, I think that in the moment, it depends on what is happening. And again, we can't speak for everyone who attends rallies like the one that you did last August. But what we can say is that we never anticipate that the police will protect us. And we encourage those that attend the rally that are on the left and do support us and come out to events like that to also anticipate that the police are there to protect the far right. We don't really see that as a surprise, given their history and also their mechanism and the power and control they have over our communities. We do not believe that they ever protect us, and that is how we approach it. We plan for police repression and state repression.
Yeah, there's not, in a sense, there's not that much we can do about that. We're just going to have to be, we understand that the fight is going to be with fascists and with the police. We'd rather just confront fascists, but the police are just always going to protect them. And so that's just the way it is. And we kind of just try to work around that. We also do tons of like prisoner support and stuff like that.
Yeah, I think everything you're saying, I have to say, despite my bias toward nonviolence, makes sense. My fear is that in a society which is, I would say, conservative by its nature, a society that denies its racism, a society that denies the class structure and so on, there is the great possibility that you guys are scary to those people, and that scariness can lead them into a further fascist mindset. And I wondered how you feel about that.
Well, there are many different organizations doing work outside of anti-fascism as a tactic, right? So there are left organizations organizing toward the end of, exploitation and oppression that we face in our society on a variety of different levels. And in part, we view the tactic of anti-fascism as combating those that wish to immediately harm us and repress those movements to make space for that larger organizing. And so when we look at the broad picture, when we look at down the line and, planning years ahead and years in advance, we believe that, we believe in people, right? We believe in the people, and we believe in the ability of those that are organizing against capitalism as well as fascism to create and build a society that is free from the exploitation and oppression of capitalism. And anti-fascism is one part of that. It's not the singular work that's happening. And many people that identify with being anti-fascist do all kinds of community organizing as well as anti-fascism, the tactic.
I understand that and I appreciate it. But I see just in a very general struggle like this, the fact that people armor up and that they wear masks and so on to sort of end up scaring the ordinary person who's trying to figure out what the hell's going on. And I don't know that there's enough outreach, or there could be enough outreach to explain why people mask, why people armor up. And I wonder, is there any way that, or should there be any way to reach out?
You guys have a PR department, right?
Yes. I mean, that's one reason why we really appreciate this opportunity to come on KABU and talk about our work. We would love to have our message reach a much broader audience, but there's only so much we can do. But I would also just say that, like, if you look at the history of fascism, the people they want to attack and oppress don't have to really be doing anything. And if we think that if we weren't doing this work, the situation would be a lot worse. When Proud Boys come into Portland looking for a fight with us, if we weren't there, they would fight someone else. And we are just defending our community.
No, I think that's probably true. I don't mean to, first of all, I don't want to demonize you guys. Second of all, I think it really is the case that there is an aggressive right-wing movement, fundamentally ignorant movement that has been developing for quite some time. And yet, I can see how a lot of it, all of it, is in a context of public relations, and that's so stupid but real. And, so there's two things going on. There's the actual struggle on the ground, and then there's the interpretation of a fundamentally conservative, at best, TV and newspapers and so on. And I don't see that the, I mean, one of the reasons why we're glad to do this show with you guys and very glad you're here is that I don't see how that can be bridged, or even if it should be bridged. And I wonder, again, what is going to happen as this struggle continues? Because I have to say, I have a very dark view of things now, and I don't see any liberal movement developing strong with enough strength that can, in the sphere of electoral politics, can overcome the enormous amounts of money, the involvement of Russia, and so on, to bring about another Trump victory.
Yeah, I mean, I understand your pessimism, but I guess, and obviously no one knows the future, but maybe another way to look at it is just there are examples all the time of people behaving in very cooperative ways and acting in solidarity with each other all the time. It's kind of like the only way anything is able to happen at all. It's just there's like this layer of capitalism on top of it. But I guess that's what kind of makes me feel like the potential for a society that is free of oppression and exploitation is possible, is because we can see little examples of it constantly.
I also think it will take time. I don't believe that we will see an end to the trends that you're describing in 10 days or 1 year. I also don't believe that an end to those conditions will come through liberal reformism. And I think that you have to, in order to, understand and anticipate what things may look like down the line, we can look at examples in history where people have created real change, where people have, created revolutionary change. And anti-fascist, again, it's a broad-based movement, and I personally do not speak for all anti-fascism folks that involve themselves in it. But what I can say is that there are many examples throughout history that might lend a little positivity to your worldview and outlook, right? And
he needs it, believe me.
and even today, right, in other parts of the world, we see mass movement toward the left. And again, anti-fascism is only a small part of that. If you know the short story, the proverb, "How the foolish old man moved the mountain," he did not do that by moving the entire mountain immediately. He did it by over time taking small pieces, and also educating his family and community of how to do that in his stead, right? So we believe that the fight will continue and carry on past us, and we look at the larger picture and into the future when we're talking about these tactics and when we're talking about large, broad-based
movements. You just used an example from Mao Zedong, if I'm not wrong. I think that's true. But that's, maybe I'm being irrelevant. Before my partner wants to get into this conversation, I just would like to ask anyone who wants to ask questions that haven't been asked by us, and this is an opportunity for them on the, just calling in, to go ahead and start calling in now, because we want to have that happen. But you want to say?
I want to say, no. Well, we weren't able to speak directly with our guests before they came, so I want to put that to them first. Are you guys interested in taking calls from our listeners, or would you rather confine this conversation to the participants now?
Sure, let's talk to them.
Okay, so we'll go to the phones here shortly, but before we do, I want to reference something you said a few moments ago. You said something to the effect of if Joey Gibson and his friends showed up in Portland and Antifa were not there, that the Proud Boys, Patriot Prayer, would find somebody else to fight. So my question to you is, who do you think they would fight if no one showed up to fight them? I'm just trying to game this through here. Where would they turn their energies on?
We've seen examples of this. There have been news reports in mainstream media of Joey Gibson or his followers literally riding around to target what they view as left-wing bars and things like that, finding people and targeting them.
Right, like the cider place on Powell, for example.
Yeah,
right.
Like that, and mm-hmm. also
that guy that got attacked by Tiny Tosi and right. Donovan Flisso and Russell Schultz.
right.
outside of the Safeway on Broadway, mm-hmm. and they just yelled something about Trump at him, and he gave him the finger, and that was enough for them to jump out and attack him. But also, fascist movements tend to just attack the people who are most vulnerable. They will attack whoever they consider some sort of other.
Okay. Well, that makes a lot of sense. Because I was wondering, frankly, if we weren't looking at a chicken and egg problem here, right? The alt-right shows up and they need someone to fight, so Antifa shows up and conveniently gives them someone to fight. But your position makes a lot more sense in that context. There is actual evidence of these guys roaming around town looking for somebody to crack down on.
Yeah, they're fascists.
Yes, they're fascists, right. So we have a listener who wrote in to our Facebook page and asked the following question. I have heard Joey Gibson talk about placing his people in left-wing groups to stir up violence during demonstrations. Is this something that has happened?
Probably no.
Yeah, we've never heard of that happening, but one individual infiltrating one individual group can't stop at anti-fascism. And so if there was some instance of that, again, I'm not familiar with that scenario in Portland with Joey Gibson's organization. I think they would have a very hard time doing that. But they wouldn't be able to disrupt an entire, you know, community, millions of people across the U.S. participating in anti-fascism. Not going to happen.
Yeah, Patriot Prayer people think they're pretty clever and they like to go on Facebook and post about infiltrating us, but I really don't think that happens. And yeah, like my comrade said, they would really stand out.
Plus their Confederate flag tattoos would give them away. So
yeah, absolutely.
And their terrible opinions.
Yeah.
Their terrible opinions and their lack of hygiene, you know, it goes on and on. Okay. Well, with that, I think we're going to go to the phones.
Yes.
First up, we have Mark. Good morning.
Mark, you're on the air.
Good morning. I have one question. It's not even a comment. It's for your people that are visiting. And the question is, are you aware that recently Antifa has been given a very, very bad name? In fact, they're using the T word, terrorism, and that they're considering these people that are involved with Antifa as terrorists? Is that, are you aware of that, or I'm just curious? Would you like to comment?
Mm-hmm.
We're very aware of Ted Cruz's measure to have us labeled as domestic terrorists. It's pretty transparently an attempt to criminalize dissent. And it's concerning, but it's not going to stop us.
It's also incredibly irresponsible given the recent history of what we have seen in terms of ideological, we don't generally tend to use the word terrorism because I think it's a term that the state invokes to, in fact, cause terror. And, but the last year, 98% of ideological driven murders were in fact carried out by the far right. And we've even seen that violence here in Portland, right? We have seen people being murdered by far right activists, if you could call them that, far right fascists. And this resolution to categorize community defense to that violence as terrorism is not only irresponsible, but as my comrade said, just a clear move to repressed movements. Anti-fascism is not defined in the resolution. It could be anything. We don't know what they think anti-fascism is.
Yeah, you're right. It's really no secret that the vast majority of domestic terrorist acts are carried out by white dudes who identify as Christian. The disconnect is how that obvious fact has not gained the same sort of official attention that Antifa has. Here's a president tweeting just 3 days ago, consideration is being given to declaring Antifa the gutless radical left whack jobs who go around hitting only non-fighters over the heads with baseball bats, a major organization of terror, along with MS-13 and others, would make it easier for police to do their job. This is straight out of the fascist playbook, isn't it? Let's criminalize dissent, let's brand them officially as enemies of the state, and then let's empower the police to crack down on them.
Yes.
Yeah. apparently there aren't very fine people on both sides anymore. So the fine people got on the side of that.
We have a caller from Salem who is wanted to know if there is an Antifa organization there and how to get involved. Are you guys aware of anything going on in Salem?
I am not aware of a formally organized Antifa group, but I would be willing to bet there are anti-fascist organizing in Salem. I can't think of anything off the top of my head, but if the caller wanted to go to our website, rosecityantifa.org, and send us an email, we'll try and put them in touch with someone.
Brilliant. All right. Well, let's go back to the phones then. Michael is next. Good morning.
Yeah, hi. So recently in Portland, people who look like Antifa beat up this pudgy little Vietnamese gay conservative reporter, and it seems to me like that was
Wait a minute, Michael. Wait. I understand the thrust of your question and where you're going, but why use those qualifiers to discuss Annie No?
Because
why not just leave that aside, dude?
Because I think it's all relevant.
All right.
That's why. But anyways, they beat up Andy No, and
wait, you think he was beaten up because he was gay, allegedly gay? I mean, I'm not getting it here.
Yeah, I'm confused also.
Well, you know, he's a gay person is one of these kind of people who the left says is oppressed and tries to support. A person of Vietnamese background could be like that also. And the guy,
you don't believe that somebody is oppressed by their sexuality, that people that are not straight do not experience oppression?
Okay. The question I was trying to get to was different, so let me ask that question.
Okay, please.
All right. Whichever part of it you want. The question I have is, it seems to me like that was an act of political marketing incompetence of a level that I've rarely seen, because it just turned so many people against Antifa. Just the visual of this pudgy little guy getting beaten up by all these people and put in the hospital, and these people are, you know, wearing black and they're wearing masks. And I just wonder, do you guys support the fact that this guy got beaten up? Do you not support it? What's your hit on why it was a good idea to beat this guy up?
We're not really interested in taking a position that divides good protesters and bad protesters. Obviously, Andy No had the best day of his life that day, and regardless of how we feel about it,
And my comrade says he had the best day of his life that day because he later went on to raise I believe $200,000 on a GoFundMe toward I don't think there was any evidence of medical bills. We wouldn't know, but one thing is for sure, Andy No is not a journalist. He is an Islamophobic, far-right content aggregator. He goes out with his camera and tries to instigate response and films that response, and he is not a journalist. Once again, we agree with our gracious host that his identities are irrelevant to this conversation, and we also really disagree with categorizing somebody as chubby in a bad way. That's really mean.
And also, I would just add that the way he's discussed by the far right, they always invoke these identity categories, which they most of the rest of the time don't believe matter or exist as vectors of oppression. So he suddenly becomes a gay Vietnamese journalist when it's convenient for their narrative, and the rest of the time they couldn't care less, and they would in fact deny the existence of racism or homophobia,
as you saw demonstrated in this call.
Well, do you believe the assault on Andy No was justified?
Again, we can't enter into any discourse which would divide anti-fascists between good and bad protesters. One thing I can say is that the source of Rose City Antifa claiming responsibility for that was Andy No himself. If you follow our Twitter, which is at Rose City Antifa, you can see various Twitter threads and us just showing evidence of this, which is to say that our organization never claimed responsibility for that. But once again, we organize using the St. Paul's principles, which include the diversity of tactics. So we have not claimed that responsibility for that. However, we also do not wish to enter into discourse which would divide anti-fascists between good and bad protesters or villainize those who seek to defend their communities. Anti-fascism is at its core community self-defense.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I also think that this was a case where it was almost like a perfect setup for him. He gained a lot of attention. He got a lot of radio time. And then he got an article in the Wall Street Journal, of all things, things that would never have happened had he not experienced getting supposedly, and I want to make this clear, what the police claimed was cement-ridden milkshakes, which was just nonsense and clearly a claim made by the police rather than a real thing. The attention given to him made some people very sympathetic. It seems to me that there's a real danger in singling out somebody who is like that and perhaps very annoying and wrong-headed and so on. But there's real danger because there's no discipline involved in it. Do you follow me?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's go back to the phones. Pear, you're up next.
Hey, good morning. Well, I think a very important question is fascism something that comes from the top down or does it bubble up from below? And I think the answer to that was going to it makes a difference as to how you combat fascism. I would say it comes from the top down, and to concentrate on these ugly things coming up from below is kind of is a wrong tactic. Fascism is being imposed upon us in ways that we can only begin to imagine, and I think it's basically, I think you guys are being played. So,
All right, thank you for the call.
I just want to assure folks that we do meticulous study. You can see that represented in our articles. You can see that represented in, I hope, that the way that we're talking to you today.
Uh-huh.
We study the trends of fascism, both historically and currently, to track its progress and to understand it thoroughly.
Yeah. I mean, the caller at first made a good point, but I think it does come from both above and below. It's dialectical. But I think that the idea that we're being played is a kind of conspiratorial thinking that really doesn't hold much water.
So you're out there to oppose fascists, period.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay. Susan writes into our Facebook page to ask, first, thank you for coming on the radio to explain your purpose and your movement. However, you frighten me as much as does the alt-right because of your garb, your arms, and mostly your reluctance to show your faces. Symbols are everything, and your black garb and your cloaked faces are somewhat terrorizing to me. Can you help me understand more of your purpose with the way you dress at gatherings?
Sure, yeah. So the black block is a tactic that has been used by leftist groups starting in like the 80s or so.
Can you define that quickly? Define black bloc for us, please.
Oh, black bloc, that's what people are seeing, you know, when we're all wearing black, we have our faces covered, and we're in a group of people, a tightly held group of people. The reason for that is to anonymize ourselves, which is a way of protecting ourselves from the police, and in this case, fascists. Anonymity is a very important part of how we do our work. We've seen again and again fascists showing up at people's houses and threatening them and threatening their families. Proud Boys just showed up at a journalist named Gwen Snyder, I believe. Her house in Philadelphia just like 2 days ago to threaten her. She wasn't home, so they decided to threaten her neighbors instead. There's that funny video editor guy, Vic Berger. A Proud Boy named Kenny Lizardo showed up at his house to threaten him and tell him to stop making videos, making fun of their leader Gavin McGinnis, their former leader Gavin McGinnis, like he was just making funny, jokey videos about them, and that was too much. So yeah, there's tons and tons of examples. They in Portland, Proud Boys have showed up at activist homes to threaten them. So yeah, anonymity is very important to us, and that's why we cover our faces.
Sure, yeah, and, go ahead, please.
Oh, and once again, the you know, the tactic of anti-fascism includes many different things. So you see us on the ground, you know, covering our faces and directly engaging with fascists. But what you sometimes folks don't see is, again, the meticulous research that we do in our articles. Some might say our cited sources are better than many mainstream media outlets in terms of research. The community education events, and I also just wanted to say, I understand, like, somebody in a black mask is, you know, can be intimidating. I just wanted to remind the caller and, the Facebook Messenger, and also, you know, our community that we are your neighbors, we're workers, we're students. We are, you know, all around, and we are not, you know, some scary outsiders. Mm. Folks represent a variety of different professions and a variety of different approaches, and we come from all walks of life, and we are defending our communities. So many of us represent marginalized and oppressed identities, right? We're queer folks, we're people of color. We are not some, you know, violent white supremacist street gang, for example, like the Portland PD or the fascists.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, and honestly, everyone looks good in black.
Well, I agree with that. I mean, I think that's just a style question.
So to sum up, the fear of reprisal, both from police and from the alt-right itself, is very real, hence the need to be anonymous.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Harry, you're next. Good morning.
Greetings, everyone, and thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
I have two questions. The first question is, these alt-right groups aren't really from Oregon, they're from Southern Washington.
That's
and
true.
The same part of Southern Washington that Lars Larson lives. Remember, Lars Larson does not live in Oregon.
He has to go sleep in a coffin filled with the soil of his homeland every night, so he can't stay here in Oregon. Go ahead.
But isn't that a good enough reason for the mayor to stop their permits of protesting because they're from out of state?
Yes, yeah, it's so interesting you say that, that prosecuting folks that have crossed state lines to instigate a riot is something, a charge that you see that is leveled against leftists that are subject to state oppression or that are arrested. You see it all the time. And suddenly that charge just doesn't apply. It's very strange because, and I so appreciate you pointing this fact out, many of these people are coming from not only Vancouver, but in Joe Biggs's case, Joe Biggs is a far right fascist that is coming from Florida to organize a very scary rally, the August 17th. And well, they say it will be very scary. Yeah. They're threatening a lot of violence. We're quite worried.
Yeah, we really hope.
Wait a minute. This is a rally on the 17th. I don't know anything about it. So can you tell us about it?
So the next alt-right fiasco that they have planned for Portland is on August 17th, and it's I guess meant to be a sequel to their previous event. And yeah, it's being organized by this kind of bully boy named Joe Biggs, who was a InfoWars reporter who got fired for whatever reason. He was a Pizzagate conspiracy guy, and now he's sort of rebranded as like a Proud Boy patriot type. And yeah, he sucks. And yeah, he's promising to bring like all kinds of militia groups, 3%ers and Oath Keepers and the whole posse.
And one thing we know is that when people come out in very large numbers to oppose the fascists, we see, you know, in Portland in recent history, a decrease in violence. Right, they have very little room to talk about what they're doing. They have very little room to hurt people. And so when I say it's scary, it is, they're threatening, you know, a lot of violence, and they are very terrible, you know, unethical, awful fascists. But what we see is that when folks come out, when they join us, when they join our communities and the larger anti-fascist, you know, movement in Portland, there's strength in numbers, and we encourage folks to engage with what's happening on August 17th in as many different ways as they can, including, you know, even just boosting our social media. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter. You know, we're Rose City Antifa. You can email us. We're rosecityantifa.org to contact us to learn more. And yeah.
Your second question. Go right ahead.
My second question. Here's a tactic I think maybe the Black Bloc or Infa should use is water balloons. No, I think as a way they can't. That's not violent. They just, hey, it's just water.
What? How about water balloons filled with milkshakes? I'm sorry, that's just a joke. I'm being silly. Okay.
And if it gets real worse, you can always throw feces.
You know, have you every time you've ever been in a water balloon fight, one of them broke on you, probably, right?
Yeah.
I my personal position is that actual violence initiated on the side of the progressive movements is always something that can be used against that movement. Response, on the other hand, that is when one responds with force to violence, is a different issue, is a different question.
Caller, thank you very much for the call. So if what I'm hearing from you guys is that if, say, on August 17th, a large contingent of Portlanders were to show up in more of the traditional protest mold, for lack of a better term, in support of you guys, that's a good thing, that
yes.
helps the cause.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, so people don't need to feel like they have to dress in black and be ready to rumble. They can just come on down and add support.
No, absolutely not. Yeah, they. You don't have to join the Black Bloc. Just come wearing our face jacket.
Yeah,
or anything you want.
So where is this event?
Prepared to keep yourself safe. Also, we just want to remind folks to you know, come prepared to keep yourself safe. Know that. You know, they're there for what they're there for. But yeah, absolutely come out. You don't have to join the Black Bloc. In fact, we support folks engaging with what they're comfortable with and staying within the means of their abilities, right? And we believe that there are many different ways that people can engage with that have a variety of different abilities.
Yeah, and if people are interested in getting in touch with other groups, Pop Mob are really great allies of ours, and also the Portland DSA has been really great allies to us. So those groups are good to get in touch with too.
Okay. I wonder, do you want to disclose the supposed location of this event or not?
It's unclear right now.
Okay.
Maybe the waterfront. It'll be in Southwest.
Okay.
Let's go back to the phones. Robbie, you're next.
Yeah, I just wanted to talk about. Just wanted to make two comments really quick, and I'll take my phone off. I'll take off my answer off the air. But basically, lactosing the intolerant. You said that these methods that the progressives use. Yeah, even they were vegan milkshakes, but I still think it's a funny thing to say. It's lactosing the intolerant.
Indeed.
The whole Andy No situation, and just I wanted to put it into perspective if any of that the listeners were still listening when any commented about Andy No. But on that weekend, the 29th, that was the weekend that the white terrorist who ran over a bunch of protesters, killing, you know, an innocent person who had no idea what that was going to happen
in Charlottesville. You're
that
talking
got
about.
Completely covered up. Yeah. And sorry, I didn't mention that. But yeah, that totally got covered up. And it's amazing to me how, you know, the milkshake situation kind of triumphs over that. But that's because the media, the police, they're definitely not on, you know, our side. But I just wanted to, I was hoping that person was still listening because, you know, this is how they try to characterize us as being violent when in reality, you know, it's eggs or cracked eggs on a politician's head, a milkshake, you know, stopping Nigel Farage or whatever that dude's name is. You know, these, and honestly, I think it's actually good, but we just have to be, the problem that I see is that the left gets divided about tactics. And the moment that happens, we start blaming protesters. That divides our support. we have to remind we have to be reminded that like these people are on our side. And one of the last comic that I just wanted to, what I saw when I was in a protest here in 2013 was an individual who had his bike. A police officer said that he was hit with this bike when basically it was just the line. It was a protest, a scuffle. Police showed up at his place of work 2 weeks later and arrested him in front of his boss and during business hours. So that's another reason. I just wanted to bring that story just so people understand why anonymity is really important. But thank you very much, and I'll take my answer off.
Thanks for the call, and thanks for making that point. My problem essentially is a question of discipline, and how disciplined does one need to be? I knew in advance from a leaflet and so on that there would be a milkshake thing, I guess honoring what happened in England, but I could see how that could easily go wrong. I mean, the fact that somebody within the police group was able to claim an absurdity, that is, there was instant cement in the milkshakes, is just an example of exploiting the tactic of embarrassing people and, I might add, assaulting them with milkshakes. Does it make sense to be assaultive? I can see responses to assault, but I'm not sure I understand the advantage of assaulting in these situations. And I wondered how you would respond to that.
I mean, well, these fascists are literally advocating for the extermination of marginalized people. And so the response that folks have to that in defense of their communities is ethical and correct. In terms of the milkshakes or whatever else the police have, latched onto on that day or that year, we're going to see repression from the state no matter what we do, no matter how we respond.
Well, I think that's true, by the way. I agree that that's a reasonable analysis.
Yeah. And it's a trade-off, as the optics are always a trade-off, because within our community and within the left, the milkshake thing is really funny, and it is like it builds solidarity.
All right, go ahead.
It's really it's just remarkable that milkshakes can suddenly become a chemical weapon to these people, and we're the ones who are snowflakes.
Well, always thought milkshakes were a chemical weapon, but never mind.
All right, let's get one more call in before the end here. Susan, you're next.
Hi. First of all, just want to say thank you for the work you do. I am a supporter. I do have a question related to a comment earlier. So I understand Antifa is a not a hierarchical or chain of command organization, but nonetheless an organization. And the comment earlier was that you don't disavow any protesters' choice of tactics in fighting fascism. But I wonder, in the extreme, is there a point at which you would? I mean, if someone showed up with a gun, I'm just being extreme, in the name of fighting anti-fascism and killed someone, would you still have that same response of we don't want to disavow anyone's work against fascism? Thank you.
I mean, it's hard for us to answer hypothetical questions. It's difficult for us to answer that kind of extreme hypothetical question without reiterating some of the principles that we shared and have throughout the interview today.
Yeah, I don't really think that that's ever going to happen.
Well, I'm going to assume that I don't want to speak for you guys, but I'm going to assume that the use of firearms would be verboten.
I would not encourage anyone to bring a gun to our demonstrations.
And I would hope that if someone did, then the police bureau would finally decide it was time to intervene against the white nationalists at that point.
Yeah. Well, we know that that they have brought guns. We know that there were those people who came from out of state and set up on top of a parking garage long guns.
Yeah, right. Which would, if it were if they did not want to express that in the media in a sympathetic lens, they would have said semi-automatic assault rifles,
yeah,
which is what they were. They were on a rooftop setting them up, and the police quietly took them down, and those people were not arrested.
Yeah. I'm sorry that we've run out of time. I hope we can talk again. This was very enlightening, very helpful. And I think it's important on another level, that is that it's allowing us all to understand what's going on here. And I really appreciate your calling us, and we're out of time. So
yeah. Thank you. I think you really did a service today.
To find us on social media for more information about August 17th or email us at rosecityantifa.org.
Okay. Thank you very much for appearing on our being on our show.
Yep. And we'd love to have you back sometime. Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
Well, that was fun.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I honestly say I know a hell of a lot more about Antifa and how they think now than we did before, and that is helpful. So thanks everybody who called to take part in the conversation, and we'll be back at you next week. Democracy is coming to the USA.
Your investment in community radio can go on with a planned gift to KABU. Consider adding KABU to your will, or add KABU as a beneficiary to your insurance and bank accounts. You can change your mind anytime if your circumstances change. But recognizing KABU along with your family and friends in your legacy giving is a powerful commitment to media justice. Let us know if you add KABU to your plans. We'd like to thank you for your considerate future gift. Contact us at 503-231-8032 or email development@kabu.fm to notify us of your plans.
This is KBOO Portland. The time now is 9 o'clock. Coming up next on Alternative Radio, Hunter College history professor Benjamin Hett discusses how Hitler happened and what we can learn from the past to ensure it doesn't happen again. At 10 on Flashpoints, it's an encore broadcast of a speech given recently in the Bay Area by activist author Miko Peled. And at 11, stage and studio host D.M.A. Roberts speaks with Mal Al-Elis, master of Algerian Berber music. At 11:30, Art Focus, Joseph Galavan interviews Srijan Chowdhury about Chicken Coop Contemporary. Don't forget that you can hear all of these programs after they air on KBOO.fm or on iTunes and Google Play. All of these KABU programs are made possible by members